Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Are we at the magic number?
We are. Magic number, yeah. We have a quorum. Great. I'd like to bring to order the Labor and Consumer Protection Division. Representative Mahoney. Representative Dill is someplace else. So if we can jump ahead on the agenda. Representative Mahoney, so far you're the only person who's presented bills in this committee this session.
I'm just trying to bump up my magic, what's that fantasy legislator number?
So. Oh, you know, I'd forgotten about that thing this year.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it either, but I hear I'm doing well.
There must be a bullet by your name, yeah. Representative Mahoney, would you like to move your bill?
I would. I'd like to move House File 12 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor with the recommendation that it be passed, re-referred to the Higher Ed Workforce Finance Policy Division.
It's easy for you to say. Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
It's all written out right here.
Would you please proceed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill started out when I had, with the unemployment that we have been suffering in the building trade, this relatively new phenomena, not that big of a phenomena, I should put it that way. I started getting phone calls from apprentices. The way the application is structured is if they answer truthfully, they are denied unemployment benefits until they actually get a chance to talk to someone. And here is the reason. Almost all apprentices are required to go to a night school class. But they can work during the day and then go to their night school class. On the unemployment computer application, it says, are you willing to quit school? Well, if you quit school as an apprentice, you have to quit the apprenticeship program and lose your job. The idea of them going to school at night does not interfere with their ability to accept a job during the day, which is when most of those jobs are, or 95% of those jobs are. And if there is a problem, they tend to work that out in with their school or their job site. So what this bill does is put them into, and I will, reemployment assistance training, puts them into that particular category so that they don't have to go talk to someone, try and get through on a phone line to a human being at the unemployment office, or lie on the application. The other is, many of us have heard about Anoka Ramsey and Norman Dale offering to unemployed people the opportunity to essentially audit a class and get credit for it. One of the concerns that they had was that being required to quit their classes. This allows them to structure a different way to continue the class, but they still have to take the job if it's offered. And it just is kind of comfort language for you, the unemployment people. It should not cost, doesn't have any fiscal implications. It's more policy. That's the bill. Those two things, allows apprentices to truthfully answer the application, and people who are going to school to rearrange the schedule with the colleges to continue to get credit.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Any questions to the author? Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Mahoney, on page 1, line 1, 17 and 18, it says, enhanced employment opportunities available to the applicant in the applicant's labor market area. I'm confused why that part is in there, and maybe it's just for, is it comfort language again, but to define that for me, I'm kind of struck by why that's necessary, given the bill you're presenting to us.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, my understanding, and we have the unemployment people here, my understanding is that the applicant's labor market area is the physical area, the metro area of the state, and their area of training. But if I'm wrong, we can certainly call down the UI people.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zellers, if I may ask Ms. Newman to finish her coffee. she's spoken to me about this section.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, if you look in on line 1.11 of the bill, in current law, the labor market area is already in there, and I think this is just for consistency's sake.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Any other questions for the author? My understanding from speaking with the chamber is that they are neutral on this bill, Representative Mahoney?
Yes, they are, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion that to move House File 12 to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor with recommendation that it pass and be re-referred to the Higher Education and Workforce Development, Finance, and Policy Division. With all that, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Here.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Dill. Ah, there you are, right in front of me. Good morning and welcome to the Committee on Labor and Consumer Protection.
Thank you very much, Chair.
The Chair would like to move that House File 201 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Representative Dilts, your bill.
Is that House File 208 or 201? I have House File
208. My apologies.
Yeah, no problem.
Good catch.
All right, thank you very much. The bill before you, House File 208, should be considered a technical change. And I don't know the history of why that registered mail was used to send a notice of a mechanic's lien on an automobile, but it's the improper way to send a notice in the mail of a mechanic's lien on an automobile. A registered mail is used to send something of value, such as a signed stock certificate or jewelry or something that has value that you want to keep track of all the way through the process of when you give it to the local post office and it's received by the person that you are sending it to. And registered mail, for example, when it leaves the post office, is in a locked bag generally, but it's in some kind of a locked container, and it goes to a post office. It then is unlocked with witnesses and put in another container and sent to the next post office and so on and so on and so on until it finally arrives. And it's usually used, registered mail is usually used to send something of value up to, let's say, $25,000 in that neighborhood. Certified mail, on the other hand, is a way of sending mail that would be signed for, and you could ask for that little green card, which I'm sure that many people have gotten. Now, let me tell you that registered mail is not the proper way. We don't know why it was put in the law the way it is, but a postmaster in Grand Marais who had this experience of having to send a mechanic's lien, apparently, notice of a mechanic's lien and a subsequent sale under the mechanic's lien, said, why does it go registered mail when a registered mail costs $13.42 for the entry-level registered mail? And for an entry-level certified mail, it costs $5.32. And so that is the bill. It merely corrects the fact that it is not necessary to send what is generally considered a single piece of paper as a registered item.
Right. Any questions for the author? President Silver.
Representative Dill, you asked why. Maybe it's because the post office needs the money.
Do you need to respond to that, Representative Dill?
No.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify either for or against House File 208? With that, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File... Oh, that's right. It was my motion. Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 208 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dill.
What a pleasant experience.
Thank you. Representative Sanders.
You can come back.
Welcome to your own committee, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you like to move your bill, sir?
Yes, sir. I have a delete all amendment, and I would like to put this bill on the shape that needs to be in to move forward.
So we need to move the bill and then move the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 166 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce.
All right, thank you very much. And then members may find the A090035 amendment in their packs. Is that correct, Representative Sanders?
Not sure.
I don't have it.
We've just got one copy. Then let's... but here are more.
There's more.
We'll pause for a moment.
Mr. Chairman, in the interim, I'd like to thank you for the, I'd like to thank you for the tea and scrumpets that we had for 10:30. I suppose it was just about the right time. The cookies were delicious. I don't know how you found time last night, but wonderful baking.
Actually, Representative Zellers, there was a lot of time last night. but the cookie elf today is Ms. Murphy. So all thanks go to her.
I should have known, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment to the delete all amendments.
Representative Zellers. Sanders. Excuse me, sir.
Not sure if that's good or bad.
Let's move the amendment first. So if you just want to move the A090035 amendment.
Yes, sir. I move that, that amendment.
All right. And you have an oral amendment to the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The oral amendment is that we strike line 1.7.
So strike unless the recall has been rescinded.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Let's do the oral amendment first and then the amendment. You can incorporate. Thank you, Ms. Murphy. You can simply incorporate the oral amendment into your amendment. The motion before us is to accept the author's A090035 amendment as amended. Just to the period. Punctuation is important. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Representative Sanders, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill prohibits retailers from knowingly selling a toy that has been recalled for safety reasons by the federal government, manufacturer, sale, distributor, or importer. And basically, this is a bill that just helps us make this a little bit more airtight and protect our children and our distributors in that as well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Stand for any questions? Or?
Very good. Any questions for the office? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sanders. I just have a question about your oral amendment, which got rid of line 1.7. Could you just tell us a little bit more about your thinking there? My initial reaction is that, you know, if the recall's been rescinded, then it might be okay for them to sell it again, but I don't know.
Representative Sanders.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Simon. My understanding on that is that most recalls are not rescinded, and that we worked with the toy industry on this strengthening this language.
Questions? Any other questions for the author? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 166? Representative Sanders, any closing comments?
In a minute.
It's a good
bill. I have no closing comments.
All right.
Thank the committee.
All right. With that, Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 166 be recommended to pass and we referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevailed. Thank you, Representative Sanders. Representative Hilstrom, welcome to the committee. In planning, in the committee planning process for this bill, individuals were informed that the guideline hopefully is that presentation of the bill and supporting witnesses would take no more than 20 minutes. Anyone wishing to testify in opposition to the bill, there will also be 20 minutes allotted, and then 20 minutes for members' questions and comments so that we can stay on time and complete the committee by noon. It is important for members and the public to understand that the jurisdiction of this legislation is only over Article 1. the proposed mediation process, not over Article 2, the fee that would fund the proposed mediation process. If this bill progresses, presumably it will go to a finance committee that will have oversight over that dimension of the bill. So I'm asking that both comments from the public and questions and comments from the members be limited to the jurisdiction of this committee. That would be Article 1. Just ask everyone to be considerate in holding to time limits. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you move House File 354 to Commerce?
I have not, but I could. The Chair would like to move that House File 354 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. With that, Representative Hillstrom, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As everyone knows, the housing situation in Minnesota and across the country is struggling. 20% of our economy is represented in housing, and everyone bipartisanly is telling us, including prominent Republicans and Democrats, that unless we get the housing situation under control, we are not going to get our economy under control. House File 354 is an attempt to look back at what Minnesota did in the past, an attempt to help us get a handle on this foreclosure and housing crisis. In the past, in the 1980s, Minnesota used the Farmer Lender Mediation Act to save more than 14,000 farms in Minnesota. And what we were a nation leader in Minnesota in the 80s, and what we said is, lenders, before we're going to let you foreclose on our farms, you need to go to mediation and attempt to work out the situation. And it worked very well, and then people across the country started looking at Minnesota, and they started copying us, and it was very successful for Minnesotans. We looked at that process, and we adapted it to the housing crisis, and what we said is, we're calling it now the Homestead Lender Mediation Act. And what we're saying is, lender, before you foreclose on a house and use our foreclosure process here in Minnesota, we want you to notify the homeowner that they are entitled to go to mediation. Now, not everyone will opt to go to mediation, but if the homeowner decides they want to go to mediation, this mediation would be provided by the Attorney General's office. And it would be a process that hopefully would result in folks being able to work out conditions to make these loans beneficial to both sides. And so I can walk through the health summary if you'd like me to do that, Mr. Chair, or I can just kind of keep it more broad and general. Basically, the homeowner would get the notice. They would have 20 days to say that they wanted to go to mediation. And then after that 20 days, the Attorney General would have 10 days to respond to the lender to say, yes, the homeowner has requested mediation. What we're really hoping is that what this will do is it will get lenders and homeowners to talk to each other sooner. And we're hoping that once people see that there's a mandatory mediation, that they'll actually be talking earlier in the process. Our hope is that most of these mediations would actually happen between the time of the advertisement and the sheriff's sale. And so it wouldn't necessarily be a lengthening of the process. We have been talking with the people on both sides. Some of the people that will be testifying will be telling you that they want to continue to work with me. I'm open to continuing to work with them. We've been in conversations with the Attorney General's office as well as the Governor's office to see if there isn't some way that we can work this out. This House previously last year passed Representative Dabney's bill that actually put a stop to foreclosure for 1 year. And this is just a different process that, of course, was vetoed by the Governor. And we just don't think that until we get a hold of this foreclosure crisis that we're going to get the economy back on track. With me is Christy Eller, Deputy Attorney General. She just has a few comments, Mr. Chair, and then I'd stand for questions.
Ms. Eller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Representative Dabney, my name is Christy Eller. I'm a Deputy Attorney General, and I really have only a few comments and would be able to answer any questions if people have any specifics. The Attorney General strongly supports House File 345. We really are of the view that none of the bailouts have helped the ordinary homeowners who are facing foreclosure or the homeowners, of which there are many more, who are not in default but are watching their neighborhood values plummet. They, you know, home values are plummeting. And until the matter is stabilized, we really don't think there can be a recovery. Mediation is a tool, and we'd like to have that be a tool in people's toolbox. So that's really all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Eller. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add a couple of facts here. It is estimated that by 2010, Minnesotans will have lost over $7 billion in home values. And the problem is getting worse, and foreclosures in Minnesota are projected to increase to 30,000 new foreclosures in 2009. So, Mr. Chair, with that, this is our best attempt to see if we can't turn that around.
Thank you. Questions for the author or the Deputy Attorney General?
Yep.
Representative Fulbert.
Should we wait until afterwards? Maybe shall we see our opponents too? And then
that would be fine if people would prefer that.
Sure.
All right. Is there anyone in the room willing to, or wishing to, not willing to, I'm sure you're willing, wishing to testify either for or against House File 354? Mr. Johnson, welcome. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Steve Johnson. I'm Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Bankers Association. The MBA represents about 95% of the banks operating in Minnesota, large, medium, and small, from all across Minnesota. First of all, I'd like to commend the Attorney General and her staff, Representative Hillstrom, for working on the foreclosure issue. And as many of you know, we've worked with the Attorney General, Representative Hillstrom, Chairman Dabney, and a lot of different policymakers in Minnesota on many predatory lending and foreclosure issues over the past several years. Most of those we supported. However, we do not support the mandatory mediation bill that's before you today. I want to be clear that the MBA and its members share the concerns of policymakers in regard to the high level of foreclosures in Minnesota. A foreclosure is a lender's last resort. A bank's goal, my members' goal, is to provide a customer's financial, meet the financial customer's needs throughout their lifetime. Savings accounts, checking accounts, CDs, loans, and other financial products and services. That's what bank's job and what their goal is. Obviously, foreclosure doesn't fit that goal. Again, foreclosure is the last result. It is in the best interest of both the customer and the lender to avoid foreclosure. It costs the customer, it costs the community, it costs the lender. It's been estimated that it costs the lender, just for our perspective, it's about $60,000 to go through a foreclosure, and then we have a house that we need to deal with on top of that. So it costs everybody. To avoid foreclosure, the lender will wait 30, 60, 90, 120, or even more days after missed payments before commencing foreclosure proceedings. During this time, a lender regularly attempts to contact a borrower to go over possible options to avoid foreclosure. That's one of the points where we have some issues with this legislation. Lenders are already contacting borrowers in an attempt to avoid foreclosure. In addition, Minnesota passed a new law last session, the pre-foreclosure counseling notice. This new law requires a lender to send a mortgager's name, address, and telephone number to a government-approved counseling agency so they can work with a borrower and the lender and attempt to resolve the problem with the mortgage. This law has been in effect for just over half a year, came online August 1st, 2008, and is working. We believe it's duplicative to add a new additional mediation provision to Minnesota law when this new law is working. And by the way, I think we're the only state in the country that I'm aware of that has that provision in law. I'm positive of that, but I believe you're first and maybe the only. So that law is working. In addition to the new Minnesota law requirement I just described, HOPE Now, a national group of servicers, nonprofits, counselors, and lenders, and it's kind of a gamut. It's a big group of folks. It's counseling entities like ACORN, Catholic Charities, the Urban League, it's lenders, several of which I represent, it's Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, it's a whole group of individuals, HOPE Now, have been working to help people in foreclosure, and they have reported that between July of 2007 and December of 2008, over 48,000 letters were sent to at-risk homeowners in Minnesota, and over 36,000 people avoided foreclosure through repayment plans, and over 12,000 received loan modifications. This shows that many people who are facing foreclosure are being helped. Another problem that we see with this legislation is the additional time added to the foreclosure process. And I actually have with me if you'd like to pass it out, a sample time frame of the foreclosure process in Minnesota. I think you've seen, some of you have been here, you've seen this before, but I just wanted to pass it out and show people kind of, there really is no exact time of a foreclosure process. There's no typical time. It varies with lenders and other situations, but Minnesota already has one of the most lengthy consumer-friendly foreclosure processes in the country. For example, the redemption period after a share sale occurs is 6 months. For example, many states do not have a redemption period after a share sale occurs. The way we see it, the legislation before you would add up to 100 days if a mediation proceeds in a timely manner. It would add 40 days if the borrower does not request mediation. This legislation would add unnecessary time and cost to the foreclosure process. One other point I'd just like to mention briefly, the federal government is likely to act soon on some type of foreclosure relief program. Depending on what the federal government does, you could have the current Minnesota law that I described earlier requiring the notification of counselors and consumers about foreclosure. If this legislation before you would pass, you'd have a second round of notices and communications, and if the federal government added something, there would be, could be a third level of notices and requirements. This would likely lead to confusion among homeowners and lenders alike. Again, the MBA members share concerns about the high level of foreclosures in Minnesota. We will continue to work with policymakers on foreclosure proposals, just as we always have in the past. However, we do not support the legislation before you for the reasons I mentioned previously. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Skobrad, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. My name is David Skobrad. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota, a statewide association of locally owned and operated businesses. Like other small businesses on Main Street, what sets us apart is that we conduct our, is the way we conduct our business. We make local decisions with a local commitment. In other words, customer service, face-to-face service, individualized service. This is the way we do business, and this is our greatest value. I say this because I want you to think of a community banker that you know as you think of this bill and how they do business. With respect to house file, with respect to this house file, like many other bills on foreclosure, we do not believe that we are the target of this bill. If it becomes law, we will certainly comply. The question is, will the targets of the bill do the same? Will Deutsche Bank comply, for example? The goals of the bill, as we have met with the Attorney General's staff a couple of times on this bill, we will certainly continue talking and working with that staff and Representative Silstrom and others as we go forward. As we understand the goals of the bill to this point, the proponents have said that the goals are to get people in the room, to better facilitate communication. And we believe that community bankers are in the room. They are always available to communicate with their customers in good times and in bad. And when it comes to the issue of foreclosures, as Mr. Johnson said, foreclosures are always a last resort, and we will do all that we can to try to avoid that being the outcome. Our greatest concern about this bill, and I'm just going to focus on one aspect, is the assumption. And the assumption is that the farmer lender mediation model is a good template for dealing with the housing challenges that we have today. We contend that comparing farm loans of the 80s to home loans today is an apples and oranges comparison. And here are some of the differences that I'd like to highlight. Number one, farm loans are generally shorter in nature than long-term mortgages. Typically, when you have farm loans, you've got four basic varieties: operating loans, machinery loans, livestock loans, and ag real estate loans. Operating loans are typically a 12-month loan. A farmer takes the loan out in January before the season begins, pays the loan back after the harvest. Sometimes those loans have a renewal, but sometimes they're just an annual loan that they take out every year. Machinery loans and livestock loans are typically 5 to 7 year terms, much shorter than an average mortgage. An ag real estate loan, which a beginning farmer might have, or a farmer who is looking to expand their production area. That loan might be a 10 to 20 year term, but again, typically less than a typical term on a home mortgage. So as you can see, the ag real estate loan is the only one that really comes similar to a real estate home mortgage loan. Secondly, farms are not only places where people live, but they are working businesses. As such, they have expense and revenue streams which are much more complex than most homeowners who may have 1 to 3 W-2s. The result is those complex revenue and expenditure budgets provide more opportunity for negotiation between the farmer and the lender. For example, expenses dedicated to new property or new machinery can be lowered by the sale of that property, the renting back of that property. Those types of decisions can free up funding to repay debt while keeping the business in operation. Those self-help type of actions taken by the borrower can then be combined with actions taken by a lender. Together, those two things can help form a resolution. On the homeowner's side, fewer options exist. As businesses, farms also have assets, so farmland, farm machinery, livestock, crops, all of those things together provide more opportunities for negotiation and more options. Another big difference is the portfolio versus secondary market issues. Farm loans are held by lenders. Most mortgages today, however, are owned by investors and serviced by servicing companies. Those servicing companies often lack authority to renegotiate loans. My understanding of this simply is to state that parsing out the responsibility between servicer and investor is an issue that we've talked about a lot in the last couple of years here at the Capitol. And the conclusion that I believe we have realized is that parsing that out is an issue that is beyond the authority of the states, and it's an issue that really must be resolved by the federal government. ICBM and other organizations have supported the counselor provision in the 2008 law. It's unclear to us how counselors would relate to the mediators. Further, it's our understanding that the success rate of those counselors is really quite high. They're doing a good job from what we hear. In comparison, according to the Minnesota Extension Service, which manages the Farmer Lender Mediation Program, the percentages of mediated cases which reach settlement in the past 5 years range from a low of 19% in 2005 to a high of 28% in 2007. A lot of farmers waive mediation. That drives down the success rate. And a lot of other farmers go through mediation, but they are unable to reach a resolution.
Mr. Scobert, if you could wrap up your comments, and then Representative Fritz has a question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just the last points. As Mr. Johnson said, we expect the Obama administration to signal and to provide some foreclosure mitigation, which they have said is a top priority of that administration. We're hoping and expect that between $40 to $100 billion from the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act will be available soon to provide direct relief to homeowners, and the question then would be how mediation would fit with such a federal plan. Again, I want to compliment the author and all those working on the bill. We'll continue to work with them in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a question and comment. There, I think you'll find a couple of questions in this, in my district. I have had a client or constituent come to me, a businesswoman who is losing her home. Her mortgage was secured through the Countrywide. We all are familiar with that outfit. And she then did go through the counseling services through, I believe it was Catholic Charities, but the Hope Now. And this went on for months. And she would receive a phone call and then not receive one and try to reach them. And finally, she's a tailor, so, you know, I'm short, so I have to have my pants hemmed. and that's what she does for a living. And she was losing her home, and one of the things that she had to do is come up with $3,000 to pay this guy in between. I don't know where he is at Christmas time. So I actually did make a phone call for her to the Attorney General's office and ask that they look into that, and they were in Johnny on the spot, thank you, to help her. And it's still an ongoing process, but don't you think that some of these folks in the Hope Now and these other people in the counseling of this are overwhelmed? I have 500 foreclosed homes in my district, and this is just one case where it's not being, you know, expedited by them. We had to go to the top, and sorry that has happened. And also the mediation thing, folks, this thing should have happened before they took this $300,000 loan out on a $50,000 a year income. So we really got the cart before the horse on this, and I think that, and I have small banks, and they're wonderful. And they, in the old days when one or two people were in foreclosure status, they could help, and they did help, and they did make the phone calls, and they did come, they drove out to their homes to try to help them. But I think that right now this is a tsunami. We need all the help we can get.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fritz. The question about, or the point about the Hope Now and the that part, I can't speak specifically to the $3,000 charge. I have no idea what that would have been about or who that went to or what have you. Generally speaking, from how I understand it, just as kind of everyone else, I think there was a ramp-up period, so all of a sudden we had this wave of foreclosures that came forward, and I think there were a lot of folks in all parts of the foreclosure world, counselors, lenders, whoever, there was a ramp-up period going on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where that fit into that process. The way I understand it is that the folks are kind of going full steam right now. They have added counselors. They've added people. The counselors have. The lenders have added folks, the servicers. And I do think there was a period probably where there wasn't as much help being offered as there could have been, but I believe now that there's a ramp up to that. So, and your other question, I'm sorry, I forgot the second question.
Well, the time for this discussion, for securing the loan, should have taken place before they got the loan. And I mean, I know that everything went helter skelter here, without having any real regulation. But in my day, when I bought my home, I had to prove that I could make the payment, that my salary, my husband's salary, so that I could continue to meet my other obligations as well. And when you have a family that of five that has a $300,000 mortgage and their combined income is $50,000, and that's the norm for where I come from, they can't make it.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Fritz, I can't disagree with you. I mean, I think there should be some discussion going on. And you mentioned your local bankers. I'm sure the local bankers are visiting with people ahead of time saying, you know, here's what you can afford, here's what you can't afford, here's what we can do for you, et cetera. So I do think that kind of conversation is going on. I can't speak to that specific loan or who provided it, but I believe that majority, if not all the folks I represent, are doing that discussion with those potential borrowers, because they want to work with them. As I mentioned in my testimony, we want a lifetime customer. We want to not only have their mortgage or work with them in their mortgage, but like I said, their savings, their checking accounts, and provide all their financial needs throughout their lifetime. So,
Mr. Schobred, and we do have three others who are on the list for testifying against the bill.
Just very briefly to add, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fritz, I think the underwriting issues that you brought up in that situation are very good ones. That was one of the things that led to the problems that we have. The lenders that I represent are the most prudent of the lenders, so that wouldn't be a loan that would come out of one of our institutions. I'm very quite sure of that. And finally, the legislation that we passed with the support of the Attorney General and the Chairman Dabney and others in 2007, combined with the changes in the economy in the last couple of years, the result of which is that those sort of underwriting decisions are not being made today.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either of our testifiers, I have a couple questions about your objections to the timing or the scheduling of all this. And I heard this before during the Bankers' Day, too, at the Capitol this week, people saying it's going to lengthen the process. I'm wondering, though, is your objection as to the timing, is it to the placement of mediation within the process, or is it that you're concerned about the length of the mediation, or is it both?
Mr. Johnson? Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, it's probably both. I mean, there seems to be a technical issue about where this place is placed in the whole entire foreclosure process. It appears that the mediation would occur before we actually would file a foreclosure, which would then go to the counseling world, as I discussed earlier, and I think you could argue that those maybe should be flipped. But also, in addition, as that timeline I passed out to you, we do have a pretty robust and lengthy foreclosure process in Minnesota, and the length, I think, is also a concern to us. So, probably both.
Yeah, here, I would just say, as to the length of the actual mediation, if that's a concern, that you have a mediation that isn't just an afternoon or a day or a week, but it could stretch on and on and on, I think that's quite unlikely. I mean, I know in the litigation context, you know, sometimes there's mandatory mediation. Folks show up, it's 2 hours long, and they go home because they just aren't going to see eye to eye, and that's pretty clear. And I've had mediations like that. I know there's a good faith provision in here, but it's awfully tough to prove if both sides show up and just say, look, we've got differences we're not going to resolve. So unless someone can show me examples in the farm context where you've had mediations literally that go on and on for days, weeks, months, I'm not particularly persuaded by that. Now, if we're talking not about the length of the mediation, but where it is in the process, I'm looking at the chart here, and your color-coded chart, and as I understand Section 5 of the bill on page 3, starting with line 3.7, you're talking about this initial notice going out, if I'm reading it correctly, at day 120, because it says a creditor desiring to start a mortgage foreclosure proceeding, and your chart shows that at day 120, unless I'm misreading it and misunderstanding it. So as I see it, this process would be set in motion, according to the bill, at day 120 of your chart, and you've still got 120 days to go before the sheriff's sale. Can you explain to the committee why that particular timing, if I have it right, is a hardship for banks?
Mr. Johnson. Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, the way I understand the legislation is that we can't do anything with the foreclosure until we go through the mediation. And in the mediation, the way I read it, it has to occur 90, there's a 90-day window, so if any proceeding is going to go on with foreclosure, we would now have to stay anything we were going to do with that foreclosure up to that 120th day, so you'd probably push your bulbs out here, or these charts, another 90 days, the way it's been explained to me and the way I understand it. So,
I know we have other testifiers, and it's just a point that I think will be relevant here. So, the language on line 3.8 that says, a creditor desiring to start a mortgage foreclosure proceeding. If what I'm hearing you say is true, that seems to provide banks with some flexibility. In other words, if you're worried about the process becoming too long, couldn't you claim that that date, the date on which you start to desire that thing, you could say, well, that's day 30 after the first missed payment, that's when we started desiring to start a mortgage foreclosure proceeding. Couldn't you sort of subjectively move it back according to the language of this? I mean, doesn't this give you some flexibility?
Mr. Johnson.
I'm reading it.
Pardon me. Mr. Johnson.
I honestly have not read it that way, and I can consider that. I mean, that's probably a valid point. I need to review that, and
that's okay.
But I appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Lemke, Ms. Berger, would you like to come down and trade seats? Ladies first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and we represent 20,000 realtors in the state of Minnesota, and I will keep my comments to Article 1 and not Article 2, which is the fees in the bill. The Minnesota Association of Realtors is concerned about the likelihood that lenders will reduce their extension of credit in the state of Minnesota if this were to pass. The Farmer Lender Mediation Bill was implemented at a time when lenders had a different lending model. Today, mortgages are bundled and sold around the world, and it would make potentially mediation a much more complicated process. Furthermore, according to several of my greater Minnesota realtor members who've been in the business for 30 years or more, they said even though it did help several farmers keep their farm property, that it did have a negative impact on credit. And basically what they told me, they gave me a good history lesson on something that happened in the early 80s, the Russian and Afghani conflict, which resulted in a grain embargo, which locally then put farmland market values in, you know, in flux. And so tell me if this starts to sound familiar, trouble in Afghanistan, market values in flux. This adds uncertainty to the marketplace. History repeats itself. Added uncertainty to the marketplace, and so lenders, with the farmer lender mediation in place, they were, were concerned about getting tied up into that lender mediation process. And so, in order to get a loan for everyone else, you had to have no other basic debt, which, you know, farmers do tend to carry other debts for tractors and equipment and so forth. You had to have exemplary credit, and you needed to have, according to my realtor members, 45% to 50% down. So you could see where realtors would be concerned about people having to cough up $50,000 when it's a hard time to purchase a home and get credit right now. We were concerned about the entire process being lengthened. We're going to look into what Representative Simon just pointed out. But we're concerned about how this will potentially further add more distressed properties onto the inventory and reduce market values further, which impacts people's equity and property tax receipts. So I will not discuss the fees today, but with that, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. Mr. Lemke, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Matthew Lemke. I'm with the law firm of Winthrop & Weinstein, and I'm here on behalf of the Mortgage Bankers Association. And we are here to express our opposition to House File 354. If the goal of House File 354 is to get troubled borrowers talking to lenders, we share this goal. However, we do not believe that mandatory mediation is the right approach. The new counselor notification that others have mentioned here today, the requirement that passed last session, seems to be having an impact, and we believe it should be given some time to work. We also agree with earlier testimony you heard regarding some of the issues with the bill regarding some of the timing and the lengthening of the foreclosure process. So as not to duplicate the testimony you've already heard, I'd like to focus just briefly on some questions we have regarding how this bill might impact the servicing of loans. I believe the majority of the troubled loans we are talking about are not held in portfolios by lenders that originated the loan any longer. The majority of the loans are securitized or held by GSEs. If I could, I'd like to direct you to a very, very simplified flowchart that I think was handed out. And please don't pick apart the flow chart too hard. It's just for illustrative purposes, and I made my wife help me put it together at 11:30 last night. sorry. But the only point of the flow chart is to kind of walk through the process of how things have changed and where the servicer actually comes in the process. Now, the mortgage originator and the servicer may also be the same entity. But the point I'd like to stress here is that the issuer and the servicer have a contract. And under that contract, there's limits to what the servicer can do. The criteria are pretty well defined and limited by the contract, and the servicer can only go as far as their contract allows. If the servicer goes further than the contract allows, they're in breach of that contract. In general, for a securitized product, as you see there, this going back to the chart, the issuer could, we're calling the issuer a trustee. It can be Fannie or Freddie. It can be HUD, or it can be an other type of loan, one that's securitized. Just starting with the securitized product, the loan has to be in default or needs to be in imminent default. Modification has to be in the best interest of the trust, the net present value, and the modification has to be sustainable. In order for the modification to be in the best interest of the trust, after all costs are considered, the solution has to net more present value dollars or lose fewer present value dollars than if a foreclosure took place or the home becomes an REO. It is my understanding that the only way a receiver, or a servicer rather, could go further than their contractual authority for these type of loans would be to have the trustee or the securitized pool vote from all of the investors to approve to go further than their contractual obligations to each other. This could be hundreds, if not thousands, of investors, and would have to be done for each loan. It seems to be a practical impossibility. Similarly, if the loan is being serviced by Fannie or Freddie, the servicer is limited in what they can do. Fannie and Freddie do have general streamlined guidelines for loans that meet certain criteria. Generally, and I got this from the Fannie and Freddie website, a loan may qualify if all of the following are true to be modified. The mortgage loan is owned by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. The mortgage loan is 90 or more days past due. You occupy the property as your primary residence, and you are not in bankruptcy. And to achieve a more affordable mortgage payment, your loan servicer may do the following. Extend the terms of your loan to as much as 4 years. Reduce the mortgage interest rate for a period of time. Defer payment of part of your principal or offer a combination of all three. And this is that's just generally. It's not the specifics. Obviously, there's more specifics of what a servicer actually can and can't do. The bottom line is, in reality, a servicer is contractually limited in what they can do. So it's questionable what the benefit of the mandatory mediation would be, and why does putting a troubled lender in touch with a counselor as required in last year's legislation not serve the same purpose without the additional cost or the time involved, the potential time? I know there's some question about if this would lengthen the foreclosure process or how that might come about. Another question we have is, will a mediator determine that a servicer has acted in bad faith under Section 6 of the bill if the servicer will not agree to terms outside of their contractual authority? And finally, this is more of a technical question, is whether or not the mediation could be conducted by a teleconference or if it has to be a face-to-face type meeting. I do appreciate the opportunity to raise these issues in front of the committee, and I will stand for any questions you may have.
Thanks, Mr. Linsky. Any questions for these two testifiers? Thank you for appearing.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 354? Ms. Humphrey, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Tamara Humphrey, I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Credit Union Network. We represent the state's 159 credit unions. And I appreciate the time just to express a couple of concerns that credit unions have with this legislation. Credit unions are obviously realize that there's a huge foreclosure crisis, and unfortunately we're getting hit pretty hard by the collateral damage. We didn't do the predatory loans, but we are getting hit by the collateral damage of the economy right now. I appreciate Representative Hillstrom looking at this issue and bringing the bill forward. I have been in discussions with her and the Attorney General's office. I hope to continue that and hope that we can work on something that's a little bit more palatable. Unfortunately, we do have some concerns regarding the bill as it is before you today. One of them that I would second is the issue on timing. Our reading of the legislation is that the foreclosure proceedings would be stayed, and if Representative Simon is correct, that would be great, but we are concerned that this is going to delay the process anywhere from 100 days if you go into mediation, or if it gets tossed into district court, another 180 days. And for us, the time delay is a huge concern because you're losing value in the property, and I think everyone loses out, not just the financial institution, but also the communities, cities. The houses deteriorate the longer that they're sitting there. So that is one big concern for us. You know, credit unions have kind of, they keep telling me, why is this necessary? We work with our members. If there's an opportunity for someone to repay their loan, they're going to work with them. So I think we're not opposed to the idea of mediation, but kind of confused because they feel like they're doing it already. We're also concerned that credit unions are going to be disproportionately hurt by this legislation. One of the things is that, you know, credit unions, a lot of the smaller lenders, hold on to the majority of loans that they originate. They originate good loans because they know if they're going to be holding them on their books, they're willing to take that risk. They're not going to make risky loans, but they do hold them on their books instead of selling them off. So we're going to be getting hit by the effects of this legislation disproportionately. We're also concerned about the scope. It seems like we're targeting everyone here instead of trying to target loans that would make, you know, the greatest opportunity of being able to work out some of the predatory loans, some of the arms that are recent in the Alt-A's. Also, kind of question, using the secured debt qualification of $5,000 seems highly low to push everyone into this mediation for $5,000. I know it came from the farmer lender legislation, but I would suggest we can raise it to at least 50. Those are just some of our concerns. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today and express them and look forward to working with the author as this moves forward. But right now we do have some concerns. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Humphrey. Any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 354? Representative Hilstrom. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple of questions for the author. My first question is, if the feds create some kind of a program, is this particular law preempted by a federal mediation? Or if we go into the federal government gives the courts the ability to lower or change interest rates, does that preempt this, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, it depends on the federal law. But I just want you to know that the federal government has already acted. There was great fanfare. There was a federal HOPE program that was going to be great, and it was going to stabilize, you know, the housing market. And former HUD secretary was even critical. And they've now helped 400 homeowners countrywide. So just because the federal government acts doesn't mean that they're going to act in a way that is going to have broad, sweeping ability to stabilize the housing market here. We think that it's very, very important that we do stabilize the housing market because, as you know, credit has already dried up. It's very, very difficult to get for people to get loans. And we believe that once it gets more stable, there will be an increase in people's ability to get loans because people will know that the values aren't going to continue to plummet. And if you buy a house, you know, that's valued today at $300,000 and 10 houses are foreclosed in your neighborhood, who knows what the value is next? For example, in my neighborhood, the two houses that immediately butt my property are currently vacant and foreclosed. That doesn't even count the 10 others that I can see when I walk outside. So the house behind me was equal in value to my house. It has a little bit more square footage than my house. There's new windows, new roof, new siding, and a deck. The woman who lost her home, she was working. She ended up a victim of predatory lending. Her house was being sold on the internet for $90,000. And now, the last time I looked, it was $62,000. So now, that is actually a larger house than my house. I couldn't sell my house if I wanted to, not that I want to. But so everyone in my neighborhood is being directly impacted by this. And so try to get a loan for a house that's valued at, you know, $200,000 in my neighborhood. I don't think you could do it. So to answer to your question, even if the federal government acts, it doesn't necessarily mean that it would preempt us or that it would even solve the problem that we're attempting to do here.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, and that's kind of my problem here. I don't really have a problem with the bill. I just want to kind of understand, because the financial institutes are concerned about the 90-day or the 120-day and going into the appeals court. Now, if we do this, I think it's not a bad idea to try to help people, and the feds come down with something, then can they go through this whole process that is current, use your this new law, and then go, oh, well, I lost there, but I really want to do the federal stuff too. So all of a sudden you're starting to stretch this out, and that's why I'm kind of trying to find out if there's a preemption or you can only use one, you can't use both.
Representative Hilstrom.
Mr. Chair, the federal government can preempt us with national banks.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a possibility. But we would actually have to look at the language. You know, so far, people haven't presented me with any language to take a look at. My intent actually was to do, as Representative Simon suggested with his reading of the language. But I have not been approached to look at any other language to consider in this proposal.
Mr. Chair, it's funny how it's hard to get language.
I'd like to address a few of the issues that were brought up in the discussion. For example, we were asked about the counselors.
And I just want you to know that mediation and counseling are completely different. Counselors act as advocates. They help with financial planning. The mediators are third-party neutral, and they can negotiate something that's in the best interest of both the borrower and the lender. Counseling is voluntary. With mediation, the lenders would have to come to the table. I have heard from a number of folks that they'll call their lender in an attempt to renegotiate an agreement, and they'll be told by their lender, you have to call back in 3 months when you're behind. We're happy to work with you later, but we can't work with you now. We really want to get people talking sooner, because the sooner you get people talking, the more likely you are to save the house in the end. The second thing that was brought up is community banks, that they're not the target of this. The greatest concern was that the farmer lender might not be the best model. I just want you to know that the Farmer Lender Mediation Act worked for 14,000 farms, and these loans were much more complicated than one lender and one homeowner. You had a different person that owned the feed or the cattle or the tractor, and so you had all sorts of folks working together. And so to say that it's very different, I would say it actually should be simpler, more simple. We expect that people will opt out of this, just as they opted out. I find it hard to believe that if the home is vacant and the homeowner has walked away, that when they get the notice, they're going to say, yeah, put me on the list for mediation. I just don't think that that's very likely. We do expect that people will opt out of that as well. I already talked about the reduced credit and the servicer situation. Some folks said that the servicers might not have the ability to renegotiate because of the contract. It was just in the Wall Street Journal on February 11th that a servicer was actually sued for putting too many foreclosure properties on the market. They're supposed to act prudently. So one way or another, they have a contract that they are supposed to look out for the best interest of the person they have the contract with, whether that is foreclosing too many properties or not foreclosing enough. They are supposed to act prudently. And so I would argue that if they have the authority to foreclose, they also have the authority to mediate as well.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hilsham, I understand your concern, particularly in your neighborhood, because it relates to mine. It started a lot earlier than the problems in your neighborhood by closing down Ainsworth and all the food products industries a year and a half ago. And Ainsworth, for the information, is a company that bought three oriented strandboard plants in northern Minnesota about 3 years ago for $450 million and have within a month decided to just scrap them, period. They're done. They're not going to ever open those three plants up again in Cook, Bemidji, and Grand Rapids. But there are a few concerns I have on the bill, and I've expressed that. I appreciate your trying to find the way it works. And I just want to express the concern a little bit of the community banks, because the person who has the loan in the community bank is also the person who sits alongside him in church the next Sunday, and if I don't want necessarily to have to bring in all those into the Wells Fargo bank that is selling it off some other place. So, and I know you're concerned about that, and I'll express the concern of the credit unions as well. Most of those are very local people. The farm mediation is something that needs to be renewed every 2 years, and I don't see a renewal thing in yours. I think it's ongoing. Is there a sunset in yours?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Hilsham.
And Representative Solberg, yes, there's a sunset provision in this. Our goal is to have this go away when the crisis goes away, and we believe that there's another round of foreclosures that could happen in 2010, and the alt A's could do it, so I believe the sunset is 2012. I believe that 2014 is the sunset date. We believe that that will take care of the last of what we're expecting to happen.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, one other thing. One of the things that happens, as my understanding in the mortgage business, that some people make a loan and they sell everything, the loan itself and the managing of the loan. I guess they call it the portfolio or servicing the loan. Whereas I think the practice a little bit easier in at least my experience with dealing with credit unions and community banks is I'm sure they sell the loan. They may or may keep the loan themselves, but many of them don't have that type of assets. They sell them to, or give them to Fannie Mae or whatever they call those things. But they do to keep servicing the bank. And I think that's what keeps the mortgage holder and the lender close together is the servicing of it. Where you send your check in, that person will know right away whether or not you're missing a payment. Instead of somebody in Chicago servicing it. And I just want you to consider at least that type of an idea of some kind of carving out or softening of the mediation of if you're servicing the loan. Because if you're servicing the loan, you should know that someone's in trouble right away. Supposedly. I mean, now, my wife forgot to send in a check one time for our mortgage. I don't think we got noticed on it right away and got a fine, but I'm talking about, you know, the actual servicing of the loan. And I didn't blame my wife. It's actually, she told me to mail the check and I forgot.
did it stay in the inside suit coat pocket?
On the thing that she just moved it. Right. We got the notice. But I'm hoping that you can work with those organizations to try to find some of that. I don't know if a carve out is the right word, but to realize that there are community banks and other organizations that are really trying their best to help.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Fulbert. I just want you to know that if the bank is already doing the right thing, this is intended to have very little impact. And so I will absolutely work with anybody that wants to work with me and wants to propose some language. We'll take a look and see what the impact is, who it is intended to affect, who it really impacts, those kinds of things. I just, as of right now, have not seen any proposed language changes from anybody.
And I understand. Sure, I understand that. And I don't have any language changes for you either. But
right.
And I know you're working with organizations to try to accomplish that.
Thank you.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't a question for the Attorney General's office, and you'll understand why in a second. Representative Hilstrom, why not use the Bureau of Mediation Services, an organization that we already have, it's already established, and it's their job to do this, rather than, as Representative Solberg and I were talking about it, you know, mediation services are a lot different than a courtroom, a judge, an attorney general. You know, when you hear the word attorney, at least I do, it makes me a little nervous, you know, especially when you're talking about your home and your mortgage, and this is, for most people, this is the single largest investment they'll make. Why not the Bureau of Mediation Services first instead of going right to the Attorney General?
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zeller, that's a great question, and when we started working on this, we asked if anybody was interested. And so far, we haven't had any takers. And so the Attorney General's office has said, you know, we are committed to this process, and we would be happy to be the home for this program. But, you know, we are saying if there's someone else out there who, you know, wants to take this on and, you know, wants to make certain that it works out right, we're open to discussing.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that's a good start. Maybe as we go, this is your first stop. Maybe we can work on that going forward. To the AG's office, one of the things that gave me a lot of discomfort is you said that people who are watching their home values plummet, we need to do something about that. The way this bill has been presented to us is that we're trying to keep people in their house. We're not, at least in my interpretation of the bill and Representative Hilstrom's comments, we're not trying to bail out the folks that watched Flip This House. And your comments, to me at least, was right away what said that, well, yeah, I'm sorry, but most folks, 95%, 80% of the people in the state have a 30-year fixed mortgage. They're not going to, their house value may go down now, but if they don't sell for the next 20 years, it'll probably rebound. I'm really concerned that that's what we're trying to do here is, you know, the flip this house folks that, you know, bought high and are now trying to sell low and can't. that this is going to bail them out, and your comments really led me down that path in a short amount of time.
Ms. Eller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zeller, I certainly did not mean that by my comments. What we're concerned is the overall drop in value of homes for everyone in the state that is caused by this crisis is triggered because there is right now a glut of foreclosed homes on the market. And until there's some mechanism to deal with that, everybody's hurting. It's not just the people who got into trouble. It's the people who have the 30-year fixed mortgages that are hurting as well. Some people who are transferred and need to sell their homes, and they're caught. So we're trying to work and provide a tool to deal with some of the foreclosure issues that will, we hope, overall help stabilize the overall market. It has nothing to do with flipping. That's not a goal at all.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's actually a great point, because that's what, in talking through this process, if the goal is to get whoever can't pay their mortgage, to get them counseling, to get them mediation, to get them to the point where the banker and the home buyer have understood that we're not going to be able to make our payments, let's get it, get out of the loan, get out of the mortgage, get the home back on the market, this is going to delay it. And Representative Simon and I have been trying to do the math here, but on page 3 of the bill, as Representative Hillstrom said, if somebody's walking away from their house, they're probably not going to file for mediation. On page 3 of the bill, the mediation request, it says that the debtor who wishes to participate in mediation must file a mediation request to Attorney General's office in 20 days receiving. Now, later on down there on page, on line 27, it says, in the event that the creditor does not receive a mediation proceeding notice, within 40 days of issuing the mediation notice, the creditor may proceed. So there's at least a 40-day extension in the way I read the bill in the process. So again, if our goal is to get people back in these houses, buying houses, getting them back on the market, and at whatever value they are, this is delaying the process bare minimum of 40 days.
Ms. Eller?
Representative Hillstrom. I believe that only happens if they've opted in. So, you know, we can look at the language and we can work on it if that's not clear. But I believe that's only if the homeowner's opted in.
Representative Zeller?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom. If you look at the first line on 3.7, it says, a creditor desiring to start a mortgage foreclosure proceeding against a homesteaded property. So if you're going to, if you're desiring or starting or trying, you know, I don't know if it's, maybe desiring is not the best word, but if you're wishing or wanting to start a foreclosure process, then you have to follow down through your steps in Subdivision 2, Subdivision 3, and so on. So if it's something that you're willing to clear up, that's great. But the way I read it, and I was told that there'd be no math in Consumer Committee, Mr. Chairman. Not one of my strong suits.
So factoring quadratic equations next week. Please be on time.
My dad's a geodetic engineer. I can't draw a square. So, yeah, the bare minimum that I see, though, is a 40-day extension. If we can clear that up again, because I agree with you. If you can't pay the mortgage, let's help them if they can. If they can't, let's get it back on the market so that there is a purchaser out there who wants to buy it, because that will raise all our home values. Delaying the process will not raise home values.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so everyone knows that it is our intent that we're going to attempt the vast majority of these in that six-week window between the time that you advertise and the time that you would care about.
Representative Hillstrom, six-month window?
Six weeks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative
Nelson, the chair does desire to move quickly to a vote here. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask on this chart that was handed out. So you're saying at what point is that when you say this, when it says down here the sheriff's sale date published for 6 weeks? Are you talking at that 180 date? That this would start, or are you talking we're in this process and on this flow chart?
Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chair, I'm not certain I have the chart here. I'm just taking a look.
Do the pages have a copy of the chart that the Minnesota Bankers Association brought? Mr. Johnson, thank you. Oh, everyone, thank you.
So, could you repeat that, Representative Nelson?
Representative Nelson.
So you're saying, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, so if you where it says on the bottom here, the far right-hand yellow box where it says sheriff sale date published for 6 weeks. Would it be at that beginning point? Where in this process would that, this 40-day notice be staked?
President Hillstrom.
Correct.
At that part, okay.
All right, thank you. Representative Hillstrom, any closing comments?
I just have one quick question. As I look at this chart, and I think timing is important, and I would agree that the sooner the better that you get into it. Is there provisions in the language that would allow the timing? And we had testimony that we probably wouldn't be able to start until the 120th day on this chart. Is there a way that the mediation and some of the other proceedings can go simultaneously and should go simultaneously, like starting at the day 60?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They could.
Besides could, should they? I mean, it's the question. Should that be the triggering point of some way? It's just something to consider, because I think the more you force them into early type of mediation or counseling, whatever process, better off we are.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll take a look.
All right. Any closing comments, Representative Hillstrom?
Mr. Chair and members, I just want to say that I will continue to work with anyone who wants to work on this. I mean, if you have language, please bring it. We'll take a look and we'll evaluate what it does or doesn't do and who it impacts and who it doesn't, and attempt to come up with something that's workable.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Members, we have two more procedural items after this vote, so please don't leave. Representative Hillstrom, the chair moves to renew his motion that House File 354 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you.
Representative Sanders, as you know, we had a procedural hiccup with House File 166. Would you like to move your bill to be before the committee again, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 166 to pass Consumer and Labor as amended and on to full Commerce Committee.
Thank you. We failed to reference the as amended in the earlier motion. Any discussion to the amendment or to the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mack, have you spent any of the committee time reviewing the minutes of our January 23rd meeting?
I have, Chair, and I move approval of the minutes.
Thank you very much. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion prevails. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.